Good morning, LifePoint. We're thrilled that you're here with us today, especially if you're part of our LifePoint online community. My name is Dean Fulks. I'm the lead pastor here at LifePoint. I do the majority of teaching here at the Lewis Center campus. We've been in a series called Kingdom Citizen. This is week number two. You've been watching it, sharing it, checking in whenever you're here on Sundays. We're grateful for all that. It just helps our exponential reach. But the big idea of this series is that only one kingdom lasts forever. And what we really emphasized last week is that we are kingdom bringers. That what we're going to study is that the model prayer says, on earth as it is in heaven. And so what our job is to bring the values of the kingdom to bear on earth right now. We're kingdom citizens. We're not primarily citizens of this earth. We're kind of immigrants from heaven, bringing the then and there to the here and now. So as we think about that reality, what that means is that we want to bring those kingdom values to our places where we live, work, and play. So we want it to be in Columbus as it is in heaven. We want it to be in Olentangy as it is in heaven, in your home as it is in heaven, at your soccer field, in your school, at your office, all of that as it is in heaven. Today in the Sermon on the Mount, which is what we're studying during this time, Jesus is going to bring up one of the core values of our church. We call that core value reaching priority. When we talk about that, we just say reaching priority means that we are missionaries. And as soon as I say missionary, I think we've all got different views of that. For a lot of us, when I say missionary, you think of a man in a floppy hat and khakis in a jungle somewhere with a wife who doesn't wear very much makeup and a lot of kids, and like they've just sacrificed everything to be, you know, somewhere else in the world. That's what a lot of us think about. I don't think missionaries are very much like that typical stereotype, that traditional stereotype as much today. But what Jesus is going to say is that we're all missionaries. In other words, all of us are passionate about something. All of us believe in something to the degree that if you bring up the topic, we're going to have an opinion about it. We're going to represent it somehow, some way. We're all missionaries for something. The only question is, what are you a missionary for? What is it that you primarily represent? And when we say that we are missionaries here at LifePoint, what we mean by that, the statement that kind of backs that up, is that we say we're going to do whatever it takes to reach the one. In other words, we've asked everybody to have at least one person that you're caring for, that you're praying for, that you're hoping for, that you're believing God for, that someday they're going to take that step of faith to become a Christian. Now, as soon as I say that, I just walk a big elephant into the room, because if you're watching today, if you're here, you understand. Hey, if you're not a Christian, you're like, man, am I somebody's one? Like, that makes me feel like a project. Am I somebody's one? And I guess my answer to that would be, I hope so. I hope that there's somebody caring for you, believing God's best for you. I guess that we just look at it a little differently. Think about it this way. If somebody had the cure for the coronavirus, if somebody had the cure for COVID-19, and yet they weren't sharing it, we would say that's criminal. We would say that's evil. Well, similarly, from a Christian perspective, we believe that the scriptures, that Jesus gave us the cure, so to speak, for what ails us at a heart level. The soul dissatisfaction that we have and the problems that we see in the world, we believe that we have been given the cure for that. And so for us not to share it would be wrong and it would be criminal. Now, you're probably going to say, if you're not a Christian, you're probably going to say, well, it's pretty arrogant, Dean, for you to say that you have the cure, right, for what ails humanity. And I would just say, that's fine. Check it out. See if we're right. Investigate the claims of Christianity to see if we're right, to see if Christianity accurately describes the causes of the problems that are going on in the world and then offers a cure for those. And no one's trying to twist your arm and force you to become a convert or to become a Christian. That is absolutely between you and God. And even if you choose not to become a Christian, right, we'll still be friends. Jesus is going to give us two metaphors today for how we can bring kingdom joy into the world. So we're going to look at Matthew chapter 5. We'll start reading in verse 13. If you have a copy of the scriptures, you can grab them and turn over there. Matthew 5:13 says, "You are the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and to be trampled underfoot." First thing that Jesus says is that as salt, we are seasoning. I don't know about you, but I'm a saltaholic. I've been that way ever since I was a kid. I salt almost virtually everything that I eat. Their world wasn't a lot different. Now, sometimes they use salt as a preservative, but they certainly use salt primarily to flavor food, to bring a flavor out of a kind of a bland food. In their world, they would get salt from the Dead Sea. I'll show you a picture of the Dead Sea, and you'll see the salt deposits there. I want you to notice up behind the salt deposits, you notice that reddish orange rock. That's gypsum. It's a mineral that's there on the Dead Sea. And when they would try to extract salt from the Dead Sea, a lot of times they would get a lot of gypsum in their salt. So they would go to salt their food, and salt didn't taste like salt. It would taste like gypsum. And that's why Jesus says, if the salt doesn't have its saltiness, it's not good for anything except to be trampled underfoot. So what they would do is, if they got some bad salt because it had too much gypsum in it, they would take it out and they would throw it on their walking paths and on their roads, because the nature of those chemicals would kill weeds. This is where we get our idea for road salt. Not really, but it would be really cool if that was the way that it worked. They would throw it on the paths and on the walking paths because it would get rid of weeds for them. But really, Jesus says, it's no good. So the question then that you and I have to ask ourselves is, are we bringing seasoning to the blah pessimism that we see in the world? Psychologists back this whole idea up when it comes to joy. I'm going to show you a picture of a guy whose name is Albert Ellis. He was a British psychologist, very well known in the 1950s and 60s, and he wrote a very important psychology book called The ABCs of Emotional Health. And by the way, you saw Dr. Ellis's picture there. I would just say, if I live to be old, right? If I get to be old and somebody takes my picture when I'm old, please somebody pull my pants down around my waist for me, right? Don't get my belt way up here like that, where it's like a neck gaiter. It's almost right up here. Please be kind. The genius of Albert Ellis in the ABCs of Emotional Health is, he said, first of all, the A's are your antecedents. And really, the antecedents, he said, were your circumstances. These are the things that come into your world, the things that happen to you. The C's are the consequences. So those are the results of the things that happen to you, right? Those are your emotions, or how you feel about the things that happen to you. And Ellis said that the great myth, that the great illusion of emotional health is that your circumstances determine your feelings. In other words, if you get a promotion, if someone gives you a compliment, if it's a sunny day outside, then you're automatically going to be happy. You're going to feel good, right? Because your circumstances determine your feelings. Or conversely, if you get a demotion at work, if it's a cloudy day outside, if someone says something critical to you, then you're going to be sad, or you're going to be angry because you had negative circumstances, which automatically led to negative emotions. Ellis said, that's a myth because of the B's. And the B's represent your beliefs. In other words, what Ellis said is that it's not really so much what happens to you that determines your emotions, but what you believe about what happens to you that determines your emotions. Now, this was a breakthrough in psychology, because it finally explained why you could take two people, put them in exactly the same circumstances, and they come out with very different emotions, very different consequences. You could put two people in the same war, two people in the same foxhole, two people in the same concentration camp, and they come out with completely different viewpoints upon their experiences and emotions and feelings about those things. So, both psychology, according to Ellis, and the scriptures would back up this idea that what happens to you is not nearly as important as what you believe about what happens to you. This is the difference between dogs and cats. Dogs look at their owner and say, you feed me, you clothe me, you shelter me, you pet me, you must be God. Cats look at their owner and say, you feed me, you clothe me, you pet me, you shelter me, I must be God. two different beliefs about what happens to them, which leads to two completely different outcomes. See, the reason this is critical from a faith perspective to you and me is that some of you are taking steps right now. Some of you are taking steps in your marriage. Some of you are taking steps in terms of how you lead your family or how you lead your children. Some of you are taking steps in your career. Some of you are taking steps now to be a more generous person. And the enemy of God is not just going to stand by and watch that happen. So there are going to be a lot of times when you and I, when we take steps forward in faith, when we take steps to grow spiritually, and we're going to sense resistance from that. And if we only allow our circumstances to determine our emotions, we're just going to consistently ride the up and down nature of that roller coaster of life. Now, Jesus says we can be different. As a matter of fact, he says it in verse 12 of chapter 5. He says this, "Rejoice and be glad, for your reward is great in heaven. For so they persecuted the prophets who were before you." Now, I want you to think about that. Jesus says two things. Number one, he said, listen, they persecuted the prophets. There are going to be moments in your life where it's going to be very tough to be a Christian. And at the same time, the beginning of the verse says what? Rejoice and be glad. Those two things are not mutually exclusive. As a matter of fact, those two things are tied inextricably together. We are a kingdom of good news in the middle of a world of bad news. Now listen, I'm going to predict the 6 o'clock news for you tonight. You turn it on, you see if I'm right. So here's what's going to 6 o'clock news. Wildfires are raging up the West Coast. COVID numbers are going through the roof. People are destroying downtown cities all over the country. Hurricanes are slamming into our coasts. That's what you're going to see on the news. It's all bad news. As a matter of fact, I would say if an alien came to Earth, and the first thing that alien saw was the 6 o'clock news, their only conclusion would be, man, this world's coming apart at the seams. And you know what? The alien would be right. Just think about your life for a minute. Think about things socially. Is it easy for you to gather with people of different financial groupings in the world or ethnic groups in the world or even gender groups? Is it easy to get people of different classes and groups and countries and ethnicities together? No, it's hard because of mistrust and miscommunication. You have to work really, really hard to do that. Things don't just come together socially. Think about relationally. Think about your friendships. Is it easy just to maintain friendships over distance and time? No, it takes a lot of time and energy and planning to maintain healthy friendships. Think about things maritally. Is it just easy for husbands and wives, if you're a married person, is it just easy for husbands and wives to get along and move along and go along together? No, you have to work to pull your marriage and to pull your family in the same direction. It takes time. It takes communication. It takes trust. It takes believing the best. It takes forgiveness to see that happen. As a matter of fact, that's why we're starting this brand new life group term, and we're starting two brand new life groups that are focused on marriage. One more for younger married couples or couples who are about to be married. One for couples maybe who've been married for a little while. If you're interested in either one of those groups, just reach out to Nathan Shireman. He's Nathan S. at lifepointohio.com. He'll get you more information about those marriage-oriented life groups. This COVID season has been tough on families and tough on marriages, and all of us at times could use a tune-up. I hope you'll take advantage of it. But don't just think socially or relationally or maritally. Think physically. How's your physical body doing over time? Is it just getting better and better and better? No. And regardless of our advances in nutrition and diets and regardless of the advances in terms of workouts and all those kinds of things, regardless of our medical advances, and we're grateful for all those things, is your body just getting better and better and better? No. Outside of all those advances, you know what? We haven't changed the death rate at all. It's the same as it's always been. One death per person. None of us are going to escape it. Everything is coming apart at the seams. But in the middle of all of that, Jesus says, you should rejoice and you should be glad. You should season the blah pessimism of the world as salt. But we're not just salt. He gives us a second metaphor in verses 14 and 15. He says this, "You are the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl." Or maybe if you've been around church for a while and you used to read the King James Version, it says you can't put it under a bushel basket, right? Don't put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on a stand and it gives light to everyone who's in the house. So as salt, we're seasoning, but as light, we are revealing. Now, in their world, whenever a city would get conquered and the rubble would fall apart, or if there was an earthquake and buildings fell down, what they would do is they would come in behind and they would build on top of the old ruins. And because of that, over time, over hundreds of years and different rebuilds, cities would generally be built up on cairns or hills because they were built on the old ruins. Jesus says a city on a hill cannot be hidden. In other words, if you're walking through a desert at night and there's a city that's lit up on a hill, you can't miss it. Jesus says that is us, that we are light. And what does that look like? When you think about, gee, if we're all missionaries, what does that mean? I heard Francis Chan, who when he was the pastor of Cornerstone Church in San Diego, he traveled over to the East and he met with a pastor from one of the Southeastern Asian countries. And it was one of the men who, I don't know if you remember, but about 12 or 13 years ago, there were 23 missionaries from South Korea that went to Afghanistan on a mission trip. And by missionaries, I mean, they were just normal people from a church, much like our church, who took a mission trip, and the Taliban captured them and took them captive. They knew it was gonna get bad. And on the night they believed it was gonna get really bad, one of them, even though all their stuff had been confiscated, had a pocket New Testament. So they tore it into 23 pieces so that no matter what happened to them, each of them would have a piece of God's word. And they had this discussion. And this person who was on the trip described the discussion to Francis Chan. And he said, the discussion went this way. As they talked about what was coming, one of the team members, a young man, said, "If someone on our team has to die, I'm young, I'm not married, I'll be the one to die." And then one of the lay pastors stepped up and he said, "No way, I'm a lay pastor at our church. If somebody's gonna die, it's gonna be me." And after that, the senior pastor who was also on the trip says, "No way, I'm the senior pastor. I'm the one here who is ordained by God to lead our church. If somebody gets to die, the senior pastor should die first," which I think is a terrible strategy, by the way. He said, I'm gonna die first. And they were arguing about who was gonna get to die. And what this team member, eventually they were recovered and two pastors actually did lose their lives on that team. But after getting back, this one team member said periodically he would run into other team members over the next few months or the next couple of years. And he said inevitably what the other team members who were part of that trip would say to him, they would say, "You know what? I wish we were back in Afghanistan. I've tried to get that closeness to Jesus back. And it's just so elusive. It's so hard to find." Now, you and I listen to a story like that, and we're like, that's like crazy. Like, it's like capital C, right? Crazy. There's no way that they could want to be in a situation where they were going, yes, they could. Why? Because they were doing what they were designed to do. You and I are designed to shine. And let me just say this to you as well. The darker the night, the brighter the light. You know, it's hard to see stars in a city at night when you've got all the ambient light of the city. You get out in the country, right? Maybe you hike up a mountain at night and you see the stars. The stars are just as much there in the city as they are in the country or on top of a mountain. It's just, you can't see them, right? The darker the night, the brighter the light. I remember when I was a kid going to church, and from the time I was really, really little, they taught us this little song. And I know a lot of you know, whether you went to church, maybe you know it, right? You remember? You get your light out. "This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine." You know, that wasn't just a song. You know, here at our church today, we are blessed and that we sponsor 210 children in Kakiri, Uganda, to help sponsor them into foster homes so they grow up in their community, so that they'll go to school there, they'll get degrees there, they'll have jobs there, to bring sustainable gospel change to the churches and to the fabric of their community. So what's eventually going to happen, hopefully, is that our church will just fade into the background and they get to be the heroes of the story. Why do we do that? I'm going to let it shine. This little light of mine. Our life groups, 72% of our life groups have got a local ministry partner that they work with. They sacrifice their time and their energy and their finances for to support it. Why do we do that? Let it shine, let it shine, let it shine. I got my hair cut last week, and I was sitting there getting my hair cut. The gal who was cutting my hair, who goes to our church, she said, you know what? I don't know if you know this or not, but my 92-year-old grandpa-in-law, my husband's grandpa, just passed away. And she said, we were sitting there. I can't remember if it was before or after the funeral. They were talking as a family, and they were remembering things about him. And she said, you know what I was able to say to my family? I was just able to have a little bit of a gospel conversation. She said, I said to my family, y'all know Grandpa died when he was 92, and he never went to church a ton when he was younger. But when he was 86, think about that. When he's 86, we brought him to Life Point. He came to church with us. And it got to the end of the message, and Pastor Dean gave the invitation. And at age 86, he raised his hand. He received Christ, and he was different after that. And she said, that's an opportunity for us to celebrate what happened to him later in his life that can happen to us in our lives. Why would you take the opportunity to do that? Don't let the devil it out. I'm going to let it shine. You and I have the opportunity to bring joy, to shine as light. And I would just say it to you this way. If you're a Christian, if you're a believer, you were designed to shine. You were designed to share good news, to be a kingdom bringer of joy to the world. That's what you were designed to do. That's why you feel this conflict at times between saying something and not saying something. And I think sometimes we've been taught or trained in church world that our job is to convert people. And I would just say, that's not your job. Your job is conversations, not conversions. Your job is to have joy. But Dean, I know I'm supposed to be a light, but I may say the wrong thing. So I'm just not going to say anything at all. I mean, if I say something, I could be the wrong thing, and I don't want to do that. Can I just tell you that many times in my life, I've said the wrong thing, and somehow God has used me saying the wrong thing to eventually get to the right thing. But what God really has a difficulty using is not when I say the wrong thing, it's when I say nothing. Well, Dean, I would say something about what God's doing in my life. I would try and have one of those gospel conversations. But if I do that, I may lose my spot at the lunch table with my friends if they know I'm a Christian. Or, you know what, Dean? I've worked really hard in this career, and if people find out I'm a Christian, well then, they may not want to listen to me or hear me. I've got a lot to lose. I could lose a promotion, or I could lose followers, or I could lose, I don't know. I'm just not going to say anything. You think about that for a minute. I just wonder what happens in situations like that, like from a heavenly perspective. I just wonder if God sits up in heaven sometimes and he watches me when I don't say something when I should. And he's like, hey, Stephen, you know, you were stoned to death for the faith, but these folks down here, they're really worried about saying the wrong thing. Are you good with that? It's okay, Stephen's good with that. Or, hey, Paul, you know, twice you were almost beaten to death. You were left for dead, shipwrecked, beaten with rods. But these people down here are worried about losing a promotion or some fans. Are you okay with that? Okay, Paul's okay with it. You're like, man, Dean, you're laying the guilt on. Not at all. I just want to show you the hilarity of what we present from an eternal perspective at times. You could lose a friend. You could lose something when it comes to your image. You could lose some face there. We've got the opportunity to bring eternal joy to people in regards to their eternity. And we're going to clutch to something like that? We're going to be so concerned about what other people would think of us at work? Well, Dean, I'll tell you what my real problem is right now. I got to wear this mask around everywhere. Oh, okay. So, Dean, I'm going to put the mask on. I'm going to be mad about it. I'm going to be mad. This is an infringement upon my freedom. Yeah. Hey, John, you were exiled to the island of Patmos at the end of your life when it's supposed to be the golden years, and your freedom was infringed upon because you had to live with criminals with minimal food and water. These people down here, they have to wear a mask for about a year or so, and they want to be in a perpetual bad mood about it. Is that okay, John? And John said, that's okay. Well, Dean, the real problem is this election. If this candidate that I want to win doesn't win, oh, Dean, what's going to happen? Dean, I just don't know. It's on my mind. I'm worried about it all the time. Hey, Simon Peter, you were crucified upside down whenever Nero was the Caesar of Rome. But these people down here, they're worried about some guy named Don or some guy named Joe being their president. No, they're not going to feed them to the lions or anything like when you... Is that okay? Folks, do you have joy today? Listen, the darker the night, the brighter the light. We are not citizens of this world. But Dean, don't you know that America could be changed forever because of this election? Just let me help you out with this question. It will be. Because the America of today is not the America of 50 years ago. It's not the America of 100 years ago. And 50 years from now, America is going to be different than it is today. It's absolutely going to be different. So aren't you glad that your ultimate citizenship is not American? That your ultimate citizenship is of a kingdom? And let me just say this to you. God has seen us through horrible Democratic politicians, and God has seen us through horrible Republican politicians. And you know what God's going to do? Regardless of what happens in this election, he is going to see us through again. We have hope. We have certainty about our future. Would things change? Things may change. And listen, I'm not against you being politically active. Absolutely. I'm not against you being patriotic. I love our country, grateful for our veterans, fly the flag, set off fireworks on the 4th of July, and this country does not deserve your ultimate allegiance, because Jesus is greater than Donald and Joe. Jesus died for us, gave his life for us on the cross for us. So let me just ask you again, do you have joy today? Can you have joy in the middle of difficult circumstances? Can you say that regardless of what my circumstances are, because I believe that God is the one who is in control and that God is the one who's ultimately in charge and God is ultimately going to be the one who's going to bring the kingdom and restore everything to the way it ought to be, and God is the only one who died for me. Therefore, the way that I feel, my emotions about things can be different, and you can be a kingdom bringer. You can bring a joy bringer to the world. Listen, don't be a basket head, right? Are you joyful today? Then tell your face, right? We should be the ones who are kingdom bringing hope and joy and love and peace. But Dean, it's dark right now. It's dark. The darker the night, the brighter the light. You were designed to shine. You were made for this moment. So much so that God sent his one and only son to die for you. And in doing so, he made a way for you, not only to know him, but to make any difference, to make a difference eternally in the lives of other people. You're a missionary. The only question is, what's your mission? Let's pray together. God, this morning, I just pray for anybody, specifically anybody maybe who's watching online, and maybe, God, they don't have faith. And maybe, God, because of the circumstances that surround the coronavirus or the uncertainties around this election season or whatever reason, God, that you have surfaced emotions in them that have drawn them, that have pushed them towards something that's certain, that have brought them to you. And maybe, God, for them, this is the day where they would follow you personally. If that's you, as we continue to pray, if that's you and you want to take that step of following Christ today, I'm going to pray, and I invite you, whether you're listening at home, in your living room, wherever you are, to pray with me to take that step of following Christ. You can pray something like this: Jesus, thank you for being the kingdom bringer. Thank you for bringing me joy in spite of my circumstances. Thank you for bringing me peace when it feels like everything is turned upside down. And Jesus, I would just ask that you would forgive me of my sins today. Make my heart new and clean. And I'm saying today, Jesus, that I want to follow you, that I want to be yours, that I want you to be the leader. I want you to be the boss, because I believe, God, that you know best. Thank you for this salvation gift. It's in your name we pray. Amen. Well, if you're part of our LifePoint online community and you took that step this morning of following Christ, I can't tell you how excited we are for you in taking that step. The only thing that we would ask for from you is that on whatever platform you're watching, you would click on the Next Steps button. And in doing so, you would click on the button that says, "Today, I prayed to receive Christ." Fill out that card digitally, submit that to us, and we'll send you a free book called Your Next 30 Days that will just help you as you begin to navigate this new relationship that you have begun with God. If you're our guest and you're listening today, again, thanks so much for listening in and being a part of our community. If you would just take the opportunity to click on the guest info button, click on that. If you'll fill that card out, we'll make a $5 donation to one of our ministry partners in your honor, simply for filling that card out. For those of you who are regular attenders and members, I just want you to know, especially this week, I don't know why, but I felt especially burdened to pray for you this week. Being at home over this length of time and months, it has an impact on us. It has an impact on us socially and emotionally. As we talked about these things this week, I just want you to know that I've been prayerful for you. Thank you so much for how you share and your financial resources and the ways that God has provided for you, that you provide for God's church. If you'd like to give today, you can just click on the online giving button there and follow the prompts to give. You know, last week, I shared with our church that as part of our network of churches in Columbus, via the Stowe Mission of Central Ohio, we gave 4,891 pounds of food to people in our city who are living in vulnerable situations when it comes to nutrition. Out of that experience, one of the great things, especially in relation to what we're talking about today, is that they had 153 gospel conversations with individuals in our city, bringing hope and peace and joy, extending God's kingdom throughout our city. So as you think about next steps today coming out of the message, please share a prayer request with us via that Next Steps button. If you're not in a life group, please consider taking the opportunity maybe to join one of those two life groups that are going to be going on this term about marriage, if that would be helpful to you. Again, you can just reach out to us via nathans@lifepointohio.com, and he'll help you get connected to one of those groups. Or you can go online to our website at lifepointohio.com and look there at all of the groups that are offered and choose any one of the groups, connect with the leader directly to be connected into a group as we start this brand new term. Once again, thank you so much for taking the time to invest. I hope that you'll take the opportunity this week to go out into the world or wherever you are virtually, however it is that you're living, and be a kingdom bringer. As a matter of fact, if you go to lifepointohio.com/blog, I put a blog post there just to maybe give you some helpful ideas about starting gospel conversations. If you'd like to go there, you can check that out. I put that blog up there a couple of months ago, and maybe that'll help you get started this week. I'm praying for you, and I'm praying for me. I had the opportunity this past week to have an incredible gospel conversation with a young couple, and see them begin to take steps towards making the decision on that journey with Christ. I hope you'll take the opportunity to do the same. As we gather up now for the day, our experience in watching, we're going to share with our band in a time of worship.